Steve Cannon's no longer with us. Died at the age of 81, about 10:15 last night. All-time greatest Minnesota radio personality. No one will ever see a ratings giant like the Cannon mess again. It just won't happen. Not for local radio. There are some syndicated guys out there who can brag, but no local shows will ever compete with what Cannon built. He was a friend of mine, and I will miss him dearly. I don't think it's sunk in quite yet. A week and a half ago, I was talking to him. Now he's gone. And I don't have anything for the show today because of it. The last 17 hours have been different than any 17 hours since I started this webcast, and there has not been an ability on my part to prepare any show at all, which should make for an interesting next 2 hours. Clearly the phone lines are going to be available, and a liberal use of them would be kind of you. I have the email out. Feel free to hammer on that. Mishki@citypages.com. That's sitting out, ready to be used like a chalkboard. We had a technician in here last night completely messing around with wires and things, and I don't even know if I'm webcasting right now. Let's see if this guy's even able to be heard. Hello?
Hi, Mishki. This is Carolyn over in West St. Paul.
Carolyn, can you hear the show?
I can.
Okay, because last night there was a point in time where wires and plugs and circuits and dials were all cattywampus, and I attempted to put everything back together best I can, but I'd be perfectly willing to accept that I'm not webcasting at all. Good to hear. Thank you for the confirmation on that. Is there a little one in your presence?
There is a little one. She's sitting in her high chair. She's just finishing up lunch.
Speaking of spaghetti, is it SpaghettiOs?
No, she had a scrambled egg and some applesauce.
Scrambled egg and some applesauce.
Yeah.
Hmm. Ah, she's happy. She's happy. Well, thank you for calling.
Yes, what I wanted to say was, when I heard the news about Steve Cannon this morning, I immediately thought of you, because you had talked about him so much on different shows that you've done. But I'm a transplant to Minnesota, and I never heard him at all before, and I was wondering if maybe, since you don't know what else to do with your show time, maybe you could describe him a little bit for those of us who've never heard him.
Right.
And
that's a good idea.
To remind others who haven't heard him in a while.
I would be happy to do so. I appreciate the suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I recommend listening to him. You can do so by going to the Pavic Museum of Broadcasting website, Pavic, P-A-V-E-K, Museum of Broadcasting. That's in St. Louis Park, but you can go online and listen to clips of Steve Cannon. My guess is, at some point today at CCO, if they haven't already, they'll be playing clips. I know his attic over in Minneapolis is full of tapes. I've seen them. Probably illegal for me to go over and see if Bart or Lynn or Jerry would give me a bunch of those to play on the air. CCO would probably sue me. Although I do actually have in the other room, I think, a clip of Steve from KSTP. Now, that goes way back. He was there for 13 years prior to CCO. So he starts at KSTP in the late 50s, takes it to about 70, goes to CCO, and sits there till roughly 98. You got 13 years KSTP, 26 years CCO. You tack on a few other years here and there with some television and other little radio stations. Careers like that don't exist anymore. You're in the stream.
Hey, Mishki.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday you were talking about the Metrodome, and I can't believe you didn't mention the giant swastika on the roof.
Now, help me out with that. Before I move on this Steve Cannon discussion, I do recall one time, and only one time, being in the dome and having someone point that out to me. But I know very little about it. What's the scoop there?
You know, I don't have the scoop. I remember I saw it and looked it up online, but that was a long time ago.
Okay, I will research that. Very good point. I had forgotten all about that. I'll see what I can learn about that and deliver it to the people. Thank you, sir.
All right.
All right. Someone remind me in an email, Mishki, swastika, Metrodome roof. I'm writing about the Metrodome in City Pages this week, and I'm not still 100% clear on how it all works. I write for them once a week, but I think while in my head it's a story coming out in the paper, in reality, it snuck online on Tuesday. And then maybe late Tuesday, and then in the paper the next day. Or maybe you people in Minneapolis get City Pages on Tuesday. Maybe over here in St. Paul they say, give it to them later. What's difficult for me in talking about Steve Cannon in terms of his radio show is I know him as a different person than his radio show persona. Not that that was a made-up personality, but that was such a small part of who he was. And I know him more as the guy who I would sit and talk to in his kitchen for hours, hearing stories about the years, incredible stories that will never be repeated because nobody lives like that anymore. And Steve would finish up a show at KSTP on University Avenue in the 1960s, he'd go across the street to the pharmacy, which had a little cafe, and he'd sit there and smoke cigarettes, drink coffee, and eat ham and eggs and read the paper for about 3 hours. It's amazing the guy made it to 81. There were a lot of gatherings at saloons back then with your media types, your television and radio and newspaper guys. A lot of drinking. Extraordinary stories come out of that. It was just a very different era. He was great friends with Dave Moore, who, if you're not from around here, you don't know, but another legend, another CCO legend. Why does CCO get all the legends? He wanted to be an actor. That was his dream. I think he studied drama at the U of M. And in the end, he kind of was an actor, but a different kind of actor. But he wanted to be a big-time actor. He wanted to go to Hollywood. And he wanted to be a star. Extremely handsome man. I always said Steve Cannon was the only guy who looked like he sounded. You hear it over and over and over and over again. Boy, that guy doesn't look like he sounds. I expected to encounter something quite different. When I finally saw Steve Cannon, I thought, wow, that's exactly what I expected. He looked like Lenny Bruce when he was younger, and he was a buddy of Lenny Bruce's. He loved jazz, and he loved the city, and he loved edgy humor, and he loved being where people were a little more hip, and that's odd for a guy coming off the range. It's odd for a guy from Eveleth, Minnesota. But he wanted to get up and out. He has a brother out in California who visits every year with the express purpose of getting back to Eveleth and seeing the old gang. Steve's not like that. Steve didn't want to go back to Eveleth. He's got great stories from there, but he also has sad stories from there. Broadcast.
Tommy, I never thought he looked a thing like he sounded. I thought he'd look like Cannon on TV, you know, William Conrad.
Why did you imagine him as overweight?
Well, because his name was Cannon.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Do you know that most people assume that that was a radio name? And that was not his real name, but in fact, he was simply blessed at birth with a good radio name. Cannon was his real name. So you expected him to look like that. Wow.
Did he call his boy a son of a gun?
Is that what...
I'm just wondering.
No, he called his boy Black Bart, which is close enough.
That's pretty good.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Yeah, Black Bart. Bart, last night, his son Bart, good guy. He, Steve was supposed to, they thought he was going to die over the weekend. The hospice worker said he's going to die any second here. He's going to die this weekend. He can't go on like this. He's not going to make it to Sunday night. But they didn't know the makeup of the Wrangler, as I called him. They didn't know a tough old Ranger. So Sunday night, Bart says, I think he might be trying to make it to the Twins home opener. Last night, Steve was in his hospital bed, and he was in the dining room there of his Minneapolis home, and Bart put the game on, and all 9 innings played for Steve, and then after the 9th inning, after the game was over, he died. When Steve was on the air, he did not like taking calls. He wasn't terribly fond of guests. He already had guests. He had those voices that he used. Mollinger, Backlash, LaRue, Morgan, Mundane. He had guests. And you would say, well, those aren't guests. Those are just voices in his head. No, they're real human beings, Steve. I cannot express this strongly enough. He did not believe they were not real. And I'm not talking a psychological disorder. I'm just saying when you bring characters to life as frequently and as intensely as he did those three people, you will not accept someone saying they're not real. They are real. Real people. So there were 4 people already on the show in Steve's mind. Why add anyone to that? Why take calls? You visit a little bit with Mark Rosen or Sid Hartman. You talk to Mollinger, Backlash, LaRue, and Morgan. You do some commercials. The time flies. I was looking at some letters people wrote after he retired in the late 90s. There's this one old woman saying, good riddance! Good riddance! I finally getting rid of that man with his sexual humor and his sick mind. And I hope this woman is dead now, because if she thinks that wholesome program was a little tawdry, good luck listening to Morning Drive these days. But Cannon was the edgy one at CCO. And today I laugh at that. Some people asked me today, why'd you hang it up at CCO? He was still a young guy. He could have gone on. And I answered, why'd Johnny Carson hang it up? He was doing fine. Numbers were good. People liked him. You hang it up because the thing about this business is it's not hard to do day after day. It's hard to do year after year. The years take their toll. And Steve intuitively understood that it was time. He was beginning to tire mentally. And when you can't do it well, you get out. And I don't know how you do it well as many years as he did. I have no idea. But I do know what happens after a while when you're doing a show and you're very popular. I do know that people will forgive bad shows the same way they'll forgive a Thanksgiving where Uncle Charlie's not at his best. So what? It was just great to have Uncle Charlie here. Steve so endeared himself to his listeners that it wouldn't have mattered whether he was doing a good show or not. They would have just, it's afternoon, it's time to hang with Steve. Where the hell are you, Steve? Steve! What do you mean you're going away? Steve, you just sit there and breathe or something, man. We just want to be with you. That's talk radio. That's what happens. You get to a level where you're part of people's family, and then it's very hard to disconnect, and people get very hurt when you leave. You're in the stream.
Hey, TD. Great talking to you.
What's your name?
Jay.
Jay. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. You know, this may sound like a dumb question, but did he have a sense of how much he affected our so many people's daily routine, their internal clock, their sense of security by either hearing his voice or tuning in at whatever point in time during his show? You know, so many people I hear over and over again that they, when they hear his voice, they think, you know, back in time, and they're right back there. But did he ever have a sense of what that meant to so many people? And like I said, it's kind of a dumb question, but
no, it's not. It's the second one I've gotten today like that. I was asked that earlier today, and so it must be something a lot of people wonder about. And I would have answered prior to the last couple of weeks, no, he did not. I would have argued that I never got a sense from talking to him that he understood how much he was appreciated. But in the last couple of weeks, I've gotten to take a look at letters he saved from listeners, and I now believe he was very well aware of it. Not only aware of it, but perhaps that was his favorite part of what he did. Otherwise, I don't think he would have saved all these letters. Letters from people all over Minnesota that were tucked away and sort of hidden and never brought out. I certainly never heard him discuss it or bring it up, but his daughter passed them along to me, and so now I know you couldn't read these letters and not feel that you had an extraordinary impact on a state. So I do believe he knew that, but it's, what, 98 when he leaves CCO?
97. I remember hearing his last broadcast in 97.
Okay, 97, and it's 2009. Steve was a in-the-moment guy. That CCO was a long time ago to him, and I think when I hook up with him in 2003, he's already in his mind old news. He called himself Mr. Yesterday whenever he, you know, left a message on the phone. I just think he really saw that when you walk away from the microphone, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, then you're forgotten. It's over. And he told me one time, he felt like it was 1950 all over again in his life, that he had never gone and done anything, never made his mark, never created this gigantic thing called the Cannon Mess, because it was gone. It was missing. It was not out there. He had been replaced. Other things had come along, and he joked about it, you know. He was very aware that no matter how big you think you are, you don't have to be gone long before you're nobody again. And nobody is the wrong term, but that's how he might have said it.
Well, in that sense, I suppose, I mean, that's something I think we all feel, you know, if you've been involved in something big or long lasting, that after a period of time, you almost feel like you never went, or you weren't there, or it's another person. But you know, when I go to you know, the links, like the Pavick Museum, and listen to the clips, and you know, they take you back in time, and at least for those of us that all we were able to do is just hear him, he is real, and he is, for as long as those tapes are going to survive, just the same as when we heard him, you know, on the North Stars, or you know, daily in the afternoon with Sid or whatnot. But
you know, he goes back to a time when on television, and he did a lot of television, I don't think a lot of people realize that. He goes back to a time where when you were doing a beer ad on television, you drank the beer. So if he was doing an ad for, what was he doing an ad for? Glick Stite or something like that? I forget. He told me that Billy Martin, the old manager of the Twins, nicknamed him Stite because of how often he did ads for this beer. And you wouldn't think of doing the ad without drinking. You know, what's out of the glass? The whole idea is, if you love it, show them, have some. Well, and I marvel at the fact that you could just drink the beer in your TV ads.
And I mean, you're a completely different broadcaster in your own right, but what have you taken away from Steve? What do you find that, if anything, that he's given you that you take forward? I sense that there is something. I sense his the way that he did his ads, the way that he ran his broadcast, the way he revered the microphone and the medium of radio, I think that you have that as well. But I wonder if you've ever had that connection. There must be some connection to your friendship.
The one thing that there's a lot that I do not relate to in terms of his radio, and I'll tell you about that, because I sit back sometimes when he would talk to me and think, wow, we're so different in so many ways. The thing that I completely understand, and this is where I absolutely grasp what so many people do not. When he was inducted into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, the guys gathered there at the tables with the dinner and drinks wanted him to do Morgan Mundane, wanted him to do one of his voices. He said, no, Morg's not here tonight. And what Steve was trying to say to these people is, hey, guys, I don't do this stuff in front of people. This is what I do when I'm doing radio and you're not around. Well, the people would have none of it. Come on, where's Morg? So eventually, he said, all right, shut the lights off in this place. And they did. And then he did Morgan Mundane. Now,
right?
I know people who, prominent people in this town, who thought that was ridiculous. And they don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
That makes perfect sense to me. It, you know, you have to have some respect for what this guy created and how he perceives it. It's not just, it's like yelling to a magician, show me how you do that! It's just, you don't do it. You just don't do it. And I understood that. Now, here's where he and I were not always in sync. And I often would think about this because it was just not the way I approach things. He really took a great deal of pride into having that ad end at 60 seconds.
hit the post.
Yeah, he really took pride in that. They bought 60 seconds. That's their 60 seconds. They're going to get my best for that 60 seconds, and then that's it. That's what they get. And I have more of a sort of a lazier approach to it. He also was a big believer in what he called housekeeping. Housekeeping was give them the time, give them the temperature, give them it regularly, do those little things that people want, need, expect. You know, again, I don't come from that school. And he'd pass that along to me as fatherly advice. You know, and I'd say, okay, but I wouldn't do it because that wasn't me. His refusal to take phone calls. I mean, just think of all these different ways he and I are different. You know, it's my show. You want a show? Get your own show. What are you calling for? That may sound harsh, but he meant it. What he meant was, it takes a lot of work and a lot of years and a lot of talent to get to a point where you can do something pretty well in front of this microphone. What do you mean you're just going to call up and be on? Where are your credentials? I mean, what have you done to get in front of this microphone? And you might say that there was a selfishness there, but it actually was a selflessness, because what he was thinking of is the listening audience. Calls were a lazy crutch, and he did not like that trend in talk radio. So I'm going on the differences, because there are a lot of differences. He negotiating for him was war. It was not war for me. It was, you know, when I negotiated KSTP, my contracts, it wasn't a war. It was actually a fairly comfortable and easy experience. With Steve, it was World War III. I would love more than anything recordings of his negotiation sessions. He had to be, I don't think he'd mind me saying this, the biggest pain in the ass to deal with at contract time. It must have been a nightmare. I would not normally feel for management types, but I'm sure they would have my sympathy during negotiations with...
But he probably could. I mean, he had probably the upper hand.
He always had the upper hand. Even when they fired him at KSTP, he had the upper hand. He really did. There was a classic mistake. Good God Almighty, how'd they let that one get away? Well, I mean, right. What a colossal blunder. You know, forget Babe Ruth going from Boston to the Yanks. How on earth did the Hubbards lose Cannon? He didn't want to go. He didn't.
I would say history has repeated itself a few times.
Well, it was funny when I lost my job at KSTP in December, and I got a call 2 days later from WCCO, and Cannon was already sick then. I think I knew already that he had cancer then. I called him up and I said, "Here it is, Steve. Here it is, my chance to go across the river and get the 35 share that you had." I think about a 35 share, and I just laugh. Just saying that to me, just the idea that he rose to that level. That's just, for those who don't know shares and ratings, let me put it to you this way. In radio in this town, there are guys holding a job with a 2 and 3 share. There are guys who will not get fired because they have a 5 share. They can't get fired. 5 is too high. There are guys who are in the 6s and 7s who are number one. 35 share. It's a foreign concept to me. He owned the state of Minnesota. You combine that share, which I believe was a metro area share, with the reach of CCO statewide, the guy owned the state. It was his state. I mean, he could have traveled around and never bought a beer, you know, on any vacation he took anywhere, just by walking into a room and saying, "I'm Cannon." So, I don't know how we ended up here, but here we are.
Well, it's a great perspective, and I'm glad we can hear you again, TD. And thanks for your insight.
Yeah, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Bye bye.
You bet. Bye.
See, I need calls for two reasons. One, a call like that then jars some things free that wouldn't be jarred free otherwise. And two, a conversation is created, which is not going to happen with my imaginary friends. I don't have Morg and Backlash and Ma. 651-330-4091, number for the program. 651-330-4091. I'll tell you why I'm not ill-prepared, flat-out not prepared for this show. Last night, oh boy, where do I start here? Obviously I knew Cannon was dying. The family had contacted me about maybe giving the heads up to the press so that they could put some stuff together for an obit. I had people I trusted over at the Star Tribune and asked them to please not put anything in the paper before Steve dies, but that Steve is dying and they should put some stuff together and have it ready. Then last night, Steve's still alive, Twins games playing, his family's around him. Someone from Florida calls and leaves a message saying, "Yeah, sorry to hear about Steve's death. He's not dead yet." And they call me up and I say, oh boy, if I turn on my computer, go to StarTribune.com and see that they're already reporting he's passed away, I'm going to blow up that building. I was sort of going crazy thinking that they jumped the gun. But they hadn't. Nothing was there. Went to the Pioneer Press website, nothing there. How's this guy in Florida hearing that Steve Cannon is dead already? How did he even know Steve was sick? I mean, Steve was a private man. He didn't even want that out. He wasn't even telling CCO he had cancer. He wanted to keep it quiet. He didn't want anybody fawning all over him, and he certainly didn't want... He had a hard time being in front of people who were shedding tears. It made him feel sad to see the pain in people's faces when they visited him. So I asked the family for the number of the guy in Florida, and I called down to Florida, and I get this guy. And I said, "You don't know me. I'm a friend of the Cannon family. Where the devil did you hear Steve Cannon is dead? He's not." "Oh, my God, you're kidding me." "No, where'd you hear that?" And he said, "Well, Greg Wong told me." Well, I know Wong. He's doing something for the Twins now. Isn't he his official scorer or something over there? Used to be a Star Tribune writer, sports guy. So I said, Wong? Where the hell's Wong getting this? And I say to the guy, I don't get it. Where would he have got that? And he goes, they announced it in the press box at the Twins game tonight. And I said, what? And now I'm just saying, oh, my God, a bunch of press people before deadline all have this erroneous information. They're going to tell their editors. It's going to be all over the papers tomorrow. Steve's not even dead. So I call over to KSTP, where I used to work. I get a producer saying, how do I get a hold of the press box over there? Oh, they're gone. They've left the press box. Game's over. They're in the clubhouse. How do I get a hold of the clubhouse? Oh, they don't have cell phone down there. You won't be able to get anybody. I said, I got to shut this thing down. Steve could live a couple more days. This is going to be horrible for the family to pick up the paper and see people reporting he's dead. He's not even dead. And I don't know what to tell you. I said, how do I get a hold of Royce? He gave me Royce's number. I think Royce had gone home at that point. I call up Patrick. I said, Patrick, did they announce in the press box Steve Cannon has passed away? No, I didn't hear that. And he said, Tommy, we're on this at the Strip. We know that we're waiting and that he hasn't died yet. And I said, no. Somebody's passing around that he has. And I tell him about Wong, and he says, well, I told Wong. I said, what'd you tell him? I told him Steve Cannon is gravely ill. And I said, well, that's not what he heard. And Patrick ends up calling back later and saying, you're right. Wong thought I was saying Cannon had passed away, and he was telling this guy in Florida already. Just the speed of this stuff is breathtaking, how fast all this moves. And Royce said, but I talked to Wonger. We got it straightened out. He's going to call a guy in Florida. And so I was able to call the Cannon and say, we got that plugged. We got that leak stopped. That's taken care of. Everything's cool. And while I'm having that conversation, Steve dies. Then I call Royce back and say, well, now he is no longer with us. Now Wong would be right making those calls. And so that, and then I think I was up late because of all this stuff, very, very late. And then this morning I was kind of exhausted and I slept in, and then I got up and, well, there's a couple of other things going on that explain why I'm not prepared. I wanted to write sort of a little, I don't know what you call it, a remembrance, just something about my having met Steve Cannon and sort of taken that from that point when I met him through his passing. And I didn't think City Pages was the right place to publish it, simply because, in my mind, the audience is younger at City Pages, and there are a lot of people right now who have no idea who Steve Cannon is or was. There are people who have come of age and never heard him, never heard of him. And even in my day, it was my father who listened to him religiously. I started doing radio in 92 across the dial from him with Vogel. We were very aware that we were up against the giant. I wasn't listening to him. I was competing with him poorly with Vogel. You know, and Vogel would take shots at him all the time because he only had three voices, and Vogel had, what, 100? But ultimately it was jealousy. And even Vogel would say, God, that guy's got good pipes. So I didn't, you know, my memories of listening to Steve are riding around with the old man growing up in the 70s. So I'm thinking, you know, the people who really know Steve are probably reading the Star Tribune. Average age of Star Tribune reader is 57. So I sent this thing I wrote over to the Star Tribune. Well, the publisher, City Pages, is in his 50s, and Cannon's a legend to him. Whereas if you go to the writers and the editor, they're saying Steve who? So it's a weird sort of a thing, but I just felt the Star Tribune was the place for that. So I wrote that, and then I also wrote the one that I put at show notes, where my show notes are ordinarily today because the publisher thought we should have something at City Pages. This guy was a legend. So then I wrote another thing, and this is all when I want to be doing show prep. And then Steve had asked me a while back, he asked me to write his obit. Now, I said to Steve, I said, you know how this works? When a guy as famous as you dies, the papers take care of that themselves. They have guys who will write big stories on you. You don't need to find somebody to write your obit. And I said, and as for the one in the, you know, obituary section, that's usually taken care of by the family. You know, that's sort of more of a personal thing. So you're kind of covered on both ends there. And he said, well, something to send out to friends and relatives, you know, letting them know I died. And I said, okay. Well, what are you going to say? You don't say no. So I also wrote that today. And so Steve is swirling around in my brain. And that's all I have. I don't have anything else. I can't even think of anything else. And then I finish here today. And I fly as fast as I can over to WCCO, which just would entertain the living hell out of him, out of Steve, to be on for a few minutes there. They're having all sorts of people in to tell memories and that sort of thing. And that'll be the first time I'm in front of a microphone there. So that's what's going on today.